Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny Beattie. We're going to be joined by Bordeaux attack coach Noel McNamara shortly. And we'll pick the bones out of all the festive top 14 action before looking ahead to a big couple of weeks for the French clubs in the Champions Cup after most of them didn't start particularly well. But first, Happy New Year, Johnny. We're still saying that now, yeah?
I think we are, mate. Happy New Year. Do you have a good one?
It was okay, yeah. Frantic as ever. How about you?
I think everyone has the same. It was okay.
Was it a holiday? I don't know. Was it a break?
It was a break from work, but, you know, like 2 weeks away back in Scotland, pissed it down every day. Great to have out for drinks, catch up with old schoolmates and friends and socialise. 2 weeks is quite a long time living in anyone's pockets if it's your parents, your in-laws. So I was ready to come home by the end, but no, it was cool. Very cool to get back to see the kids celebrate Christmas with their family and their wider family was excellent, but nice also to get back to France. Not going to lie.
Mine was a little more local than yours, as is always the case. And yeah. If there's anything that's going to cheer me up, it's you talking about travel, Johnny. So,
oh, fucking hell.
We exchanged a few voice notes and you are always, I'm traveling via here. So go on, give us an insight. Do you spend about 2 days traveling back and forth to Scotland?
Well, I live in a lovely part of the world, but it's not easy to get to.
You pay the price.
Well, it's just those times of year where there's nothing direct. So you have to drive down to Bilbao, which is about 2 hours, or you drive up to Bordeaux. But we had to go Bilbao to Amsterdam, wait there for a bit, and then go Amsterdam, Glasgow, and do the same on the way back. But on the way back, we didn't get home till about 2 a.m.
And you didn't take in the sights of Amsterdam with the kids, no, for a couple of hours?
There were no bongs and crepes, mate. Yeah. There was no smoking a pancake. There was nothing.
And that's Christmas. New Year, any resolutions?
Oof, there's a few. And I'm not one for resolutions, but I am 4 years out of rugby, but I look like I've been out of rugby for about 50 years. Man bod, boobs, saggy ass, the whole nine yards, mate. I cannot run the length of myself. I'm an embarrassment. 4 years out of rugby, but I also, and I get this more and more, I don't think MD's got it down, but my work-life balance,
yes,
probably needs addressed. And I think everyone that is our age, that is trying to look after themselves, look after a family, socialize, have a good crack with mates, we haven't cracked it. So the first part is definitely physical, take better care of myself. The second part is get that balance better. So go out for a beer with mates, or out for a meal with the wife, spend more time with the kids, and generally be more present. I'm not sure if that's the right thing, but you're so caught in the hamster wheel of trying to do well and trying to work that you never quite get it right. And that second part is probably counterintuitive to the first part of trying to be physically better in shape. So probably going to be sat here in 2025 saying the exact same thing. But those are mine. Yours?
I was going to say amen to both of those. They can be joint resolutions for both of us. We won't achieve them, but we'll aim. The other one is the other half, the better half has been decluttering, I think, in the first week. She goes back to work after maternity leave shortly, and she's been sprucing up the house. I don't know. I think that's a thing. You can see, Johnny, the listeners won't be able to. It hasn't happened in my office. It's a state. So, you know, there's a resolution, short term.
I love as well that all these resolutions actually come from our missuses, don't they? Yeah, yes, you should probably physically do a bit. You should probably chuck some shit out and sort your life out. Yeah, you're right.
On the rugby, before we get into stuff on the field, obviously the main news over the past week or so has centered around the top 14. And Owen Farrell, is he heading to Racing next season? What are the reports in France?
Mate, they're mad keen. everyone here is mad keen. Racing put out a communication to say, you know, play it down.
It wasn't convincing, was it? That communication was. It's not confirmed, but it didn't dispute that there were talks.
Neither confirm nor deny that we're talking, but nothing's been officially. Oh, look, they're in the market for Big Ten. They have been for a while. Like in the past, there have been your Dan Carters. They've had big signings. They were after one of the Barrett brothers last year. It didn't happen. They've got two youngsters that are excellent. Tristan Tedder and Antoine Gilbert are playing well in a system that is going well for them so far. They're flying the top 14, but they want a marquee 10. And everyone knows that in France. And they haven't been shy about quashing those rumours. And it all sort of lines up. Like Farrell taking a break with international, maybe falling out of love with it. Lancaster's worked with them before. They worked really well together as part of the English setup. The big budget, he would give himself a good payday. Logistically, it's not too far from where he is. It's not like he's the south of France and lost. It's Paris. So it all makes sense, mate. I think it'd be a great move for him.
And could still return to England in time to play at the next World Cup if the rules don't change.
But then if you look at the list of players that are coming over or are due to come over this summer, England are going to have to do something. I mean, there's just no way. I mean, I understand that the financial mechanisms and the power of the Premiership can't compare at the minute to the top 14. But when you look at Arundel, Nowell already gone, Farrell potential, Ludlam, Sinclair, Johnny Hill reportedly as well this week to Lyon, there are others. So they're about to lose the chunk of their best. It's not going to be just middle of the road English players coming to France. It's going to be your elite. And you're going to lose your best players. They're not going to be playing in the Prem. So the RFU have got a big decision to make over the next 6 months. What is their rule going to be? I think they're going to have to change something. Otherwise, they're going to keep losing players. So yeah, but for the league, it's exciting. It is great to see. And we haven't seen that many English players in the top 14 for years. Not since your Simon Shaws, your Sheridans, your Johnny Wilkinsons down in Toulon. There haven't been that many. So it's great for the international market to see these players coming on. And they're top class players. It's not like they're middle of the road washed up Scottish bods or Saffirs or, you know, like these are top class internationals. So I'm excited to see them come. And I hope that the RFU loosens a little bit their ruling to allow them to have that experience, which is different and it's rich culturally in the different places you get the experience while still playing international rugby, which I think is also important. So hopefully they change something.
If that move does come off, it may mean that Maro Itoje stays at Saracens as the marquee player. There'll be more cash for him there. Who knows? One England international, more at the end of his career, who's been linked with France, but not the top 14 at the moment. Courtney Laws isn't off to Provence, is he?
Why wouldn't he?
Nice part of the world.
Have you been to Provence?
A long time ago, yeah.
Mate, catch up with Jimmy Gawperth, who I caught up with over the World Cup, and ask him about his days and what he thinks of Provence. It's magical. And for Courtney Laws, you go into a club that, and you say Courtney Laws, and you think, oh, that doesn't fit. Well, they've got Jimmy Gawperth, they've got Tamata Harrison, they've George North has lined up to go there next season as well. So they have big investment, huge ambition, and he'd be perfect for them as a 4-6, bringing some experience. He was still world-class at the World Cup. I thought he was one of England's best players. So again, the financial decisions that are going to come into play, there is less finance in the Premiership. He is no longer an England international. He's retired. Therefore, Northampton have to stump up and pay his full pay packet. They don't get any help from the RFU. So it makes sense. You're moving for that dream move in the south of France in one of the most beautiful parts of the world that you can play rugby and probably a very good paycheck. So, mate, I'd love to see him. There's a chance they come up and he's in top 14 straight away, but there's worse places to finish your rugby career because Provence is absolutely stunning.
Right, we'll get our guest on in just a minute and we will chat a lot more about the top 14 on the field over the festive period a bit later on. But first, we should find out what your meter moment of the week is, Johnny.
Mate, it's a couple from the same player with effectively identical action. The first one was to win his side at home against Racing 2 weeks ago. Rémi Bagé stepped forward, the man, the myth, the legend. We called him the spy.
Because?
Because he didn't look like a rugby player. He didn't move like a rugby player. He didn't talk like a rugby player. But then all of a sudden you chuck him a ball and he runs like a chicken 100 miles an hour and pulls things out of his backside that are absolutely phenomenal. So L'Espion was his nickname. And he'd always be like, why are you calling me the spy? That makes no sense. Because it would be an insult. We didn't call it to his face. But we were always amazed by the things he managed to pull off on the field. And another two weekends on the trot. The exact same play, cross-heel kick from Cami Lopez. He gathers the ball, then chips and rounds his man twice. First at home against Racing to win aside the game. They were down by 20 points all game. This weekend against Bordeaux, the exact same action. Crossfield kick, Cami Lopez, the same connection to Remy Bagé, the spy, who guddles the ball, don't know how many times, like juggles it, then knocks it off his shin. This is why he was the spy, mate. Sclaffs it off his shin, manages to outrun two people, gathers the ball and dots down again for another try. So the exact same action, the exact same connection, but the spy from Bayonne, Remy Bagé, is the meter moment of the week. And two weekends on the trot, absolutely phenomenal.
It's a change of direction as well. I thought you were going to call him the crab. He runs sideways for these tries.
I don't know what he runs. He doesn't even run like an athlete, a rugby player. He's just incredible. Like, not the right shape, not the right size, but that's the beauty of the sport, right? You get these guys that crop up and are capable of pulling off these things. And that's it. Really cool skill set. Nearly won the game in Bordeaux for his side as well, which was the Taieb Brew Derby, the president of Bayonne and the now head coach of Bordeaux that can't stand each other, which would have been huge for Bayonne to go to Bordeaux and win that game. Two wonderful pieces of skill. Check it out on the top 14 social media pages. We shared it on our story as well. Remy Bagé, the spy.
There we go. That was Johnny's meter moment of the week. And meter is the world's number one wireless meat thermometer, recently making over 20 million cooks better with their game-changing app and completely wireless Bluetooth meat probe. You can use it on a barbecue, in the oven, or in a pan, and you can get your hands on one at meter.com. Plus, you can get 10% off any full-price item. All you have to do is enter the code FrenchPod10 at checkout. That's FrenchPod10, and you'll get 10% off any full-price item at meter.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's get our guest on now then, and we can have a chat with an Irishman who's moved to France via South Africa and is now in charge of one of the best backlines in world rugby. Bordeaux attack coach Noel McNamara joins us. How you doing?
Yeah, very well. Thanks very much for having me on, boys.
Thanks very much for coming on. And you've been there about 6 months or so now, so how are you settling in? How are you finding it compared to all the other environments you've been in recently?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, arrived on the 1st of July. Obviously, it's been a little bit of an unusual season in the sense of, you know, when I arrived, World Cup fever was probably just starting here in France. And unfortunately for the Irish and the French, didn't end maybe as had been hoped. And yeah, obviously back into it now again. So yeah, listen, it's been brilliant. It's been a bit of a whirlwind, I suppose. Lots of different challenges, not least the French, which maybe I underestimated at the outset. But it's been brilliant. Yeah, really enjoying it so far. My family have settled well, and yeah, that's probably a pretty important piece of the jigsaw as well.
Mate, the World Cup was still more positive for the Irish than it was for Scottish, but that's for another day. You were obviously at the Sharks with Yannick Brew, who was my old coach at Bayonne in South Africa. So was it an easy choice to come back to Europe and follow him, or did you take some convincing?
I think, to be honest, I love my time in South Africa. Incredibly grateful to the Sharks for the opportunity and incredibly grateful to the people that I worked with over there. I must say, I absolutely love the boys. There's an amazing group of players there, but the distance from home, you know, it did become a bit of a challenge. I think the South African teams have a lot to contend with, you know, in terms of the time they spend away from home to compete in Europe. There's similar challenges in terms of player availability as there is all over. And we probably were at the stage where we were looking to maybe get back a little bit closer to home. In terms of the Yannick piece, he's just a brilliant guy. You know, we had a fantastic relationship. We struck up a pretty instant rapport. His vision of the game would be very similar to mine in terms of, you know, you look at his education coming from Toulouse and the teams that he's coached is incredibly positive. We would have worked closely together. He would have had a pretty good insight in terms of how I went about coaching and about that process. And yeah, I think once it became clear that we wanted to kind of get a little bit closer, Yannick obviously had the opportunity in Bordeaux. And I think then it's just, the excitement to the challenge of the top 14. It is an incredible tournament, I think. And we were obviously intrigued a little bit as a family about the way of life and in France and an opportunity to experience that adventure. And then the last piece, I suppose, is just the players and the opportunity to work with, what is a fantastic group of players here in Bordeaux. You know, it was something that we obviously visited with the Sharks. We played them in the Champions Cup last season, experienced Chaban. My first ever, I coached the Irish 20s as well for 3 years, but my first ever game was at Chaban against France. I got to experience Roman Entemac scoring 2 late tries to win the game. And every day as I walk down the tunnel to get to the main pitch in Chaban, I walk past the poster of the French under 20 celebrating one of the tries. So it's a nice little side story. But yeah, it was ultimately, I guess, it just made a very attractive prospect. You know, it's a nice city as well. And that probably all added up to being a great opportunity.
You've not made them set that poster down yet then?
No, it's a good reminder. It's a good reminder. I've got a very simple philosophy. Don't let the highs be too high and don't let the lows be too low. So I think it's important to probably stay balanced in the middle. But yeah, pretty much every single game, at some point I pass that poster on the way. It's a back rower from Ulster, Aaron Hall, and he's disconsolate behind the sticks after I think Romain scored his second in the second half. So there you go.
I think we've all got a version though. Like there's one of me and my teammates when we were at Cast. And I think we shipped something like 55 points against Bordeaux. That's another one that's up there. So every time I come to do stuff for TNT, you walk past it, everyone's got a reminder because that, like, it's a horrible place to go to. It's also a special ground as well because not many people have that tunnel walk. People don't know, but from like the players' compound up top from where you change, there's like, I don't know how long it is, like 150-meter tunnel that you have to, 100-meter tunnel maybe, that you have to walk through shoulder to shoulder with your opposition to get to the field. And Bordeaux lined it with all the best moments. You know, there's Maradona, there's Zidane, there's football, there's rugby, there's all the best sporting moments. And inevitably, there's an Irishman and a Scotsman getting dumped on by one of the teams as you get to the tunnel. So it happens to us all, mate. But like talking South Africa, Ireland and France, like the thing that really intrigues me about you is the cultural difference of all the different environments and people that you've worked with and like individuals that operate at an extremely high level. You mentioned a few of the struggles in South Africa, but I wonder if you could pick apart a little bit about the talent that you've worked with, the strengths culturally, the different places you've been and what you've seen so far, because it's an incredible journey. Not many coaches so young in their career get to do so much.
Yeah, listen, and I can put another one in there as well. I spent 4 months down in New Zealand. I coached North Harbour in the Mitre 10 Cup, as it was at the time, and got the opportunity to work with some fantastic players there as well. You know, the guys like James Parsons, who played for the All Blacks, Tavita Lee, Matt Duffy, Sean Stevenson, who's currently just coming through, and Mark Talea as well was there at the time. I'm very lucky. I've had a very different journey, obviously, to get to the point where I am now, and it's probably the richness of that journey that has ultimately benefited me in the long run. You know, I started with that New Zealand experience. I came from it was in 2018. I'd just taken over the Irish 20s, and you know, it was facilitated by the RFU, and it was just an unbelievable opportunity to experience a different culture. I'm originally a maths teacher, and was probably very process driven, probably very process orientated, and you work hard to find a solution, and it's not necessarily the results that's most important. It's about the process along the way and the journey to get to that solution. So when I went to New Zealand, I coached the fence, which was something new for me. I worked a bit with Andy Farrell prior to going out there. I had been a head coach pretty much an attack all the way up to that point. And so having to do that, I spoke to Tom Coventry, who was a head coach out there. I had 20 slides rolled for my first defence meeting, and TC said, "No, mate, that's just not happening. I want 3. So I was like, I can't reduce it down to 3. That's not possible. So anyway, eventually, I think we settled on 6. So I started, and obviously, you know, presenting is something I'm comfortable with. It's something I feel I'm. And after onto the second slide, there's one of the players in front of me. His eyes were starting to shut. It was a real awakening for me, I suppose, where it was like, oh, okay. And understanding that establishing a connection with the players, building a rapport was far more important. And I think that's probably been communicated a little bit. That was probably a really big thing for me. I think in Ireland, we're very lucky with the educational background of a lot of the players that we work with, and their ability to process large volumes of information, a lot of detail. And it's not necessarily the same across the world, and it's not necessarily better. So, like for me, I was coming from the school of Joe and how that would work, a lot of detail and everything else, and probably pitched into that was a big shock to the system. I was exposed to other things over there as well, and one that I keep you know going back to, someone like Mark Talea was there at the time, and for me, I could just see what Mark Talea couldn't do. You know, at the time, he had just come into the system early; he wasn't great. Defensively, he wasn't great. So I was looking at it from that lens, and that was probably really what I saw. Whereas I remember at the time, you know, Dan Halangahu, who worked there, and TC as well, Tom Coventry, was saying to me, "Well, listen, you tell me about what you're going to do about what he can't." It was probably just a really good lesson for me, having the ability to see the bigger picture, I guess. So that was the first thing. Come back and obviously coach Irish 20s after that. For me, it probably awakened an understanding of there is a whole other world there, and there is a whole different way of doing it. And maybe it's not necessarily what you do, but how you do it and why you do it. And probably worked quite a bit around that. And you know, even with, with Irish players, you know, their ability to take on lots of information, but maybe that's not the best way. Maybe the game is a little bit simpler than that. And you hear a criticism a lot about people sometimes, they don't have good detail, or they don't have enough detail, or maybe that was something that was challenged, I guess. A lot of the things that I taught and the way I taught was challenged in that first, in New Zealand, we tried to do things a little bit differently around player ownership and around the players driving the plan a little bit more with the Irish 20s. And that certainly, worked to a degree. And then I guess going to South Africa, just a fantastic challenge. You know, again, you look at the Sharks, you look at the caliber players that were there. They had just come off winning the World Cup in 2019. A fantastic opportunity to learn and work in a different environment. And almost like I experienced something very similar to what happened in New Zealand. You know, your players come in whose first language was Xhosa or Zulu or Afrikaans. We had an Argentinian out half, Tico Benilla. And then we had me with a thick Irish accent in the middle of them all as well. So all of that probably, really challenged how I coached, how I connected with people, how I tried to get my message across. And I guess the one thing I would always say, very little fear of failure in lots of ways. So failing makes you better, you know, so it didn't always work. I'll be very clear on that. But I think, you know, through that process, hopefully got better. I think as well, I'd finished with the Irish 20s. I remember reading something at the time about the only way to get better coaching is to time in the saddle and coaching. And I'd stop coaching. I was the academy manager at Leinster as well, a job I loved. But it was not on the pitch. It was working with people. I really missed it. And yeah, as I said, the whole opportunity kind of came together to go to South Africa. I've got a very brave wife, to be honest. You know, she up sticks with two young kids and went to New Zealand. She up sticks with three young kids and went to South Africa. Yeah, it's probably something that can't be taken for granted. You know, she'd be well within her rights to say, listen, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. Like, you're crazy. You've got a good job. You know, just, yeah. Well, that's probably how it came about. I've been very lucky with the people that I've worked with along the way as well. You know, that gave me the opportunity, as I mentioned. And I've always had this thing about comfort zone, learning zone, panic zone. So, you know, if the comfort zone is in the middle, you got to try and push out towards the panic zone as much as possible and try and find that sweet spot.
And there's so much to discuss on that journey. But going back to the start, Johnny mentioned the path. You mentioned you were a maths teacher. You didn't play rugby, right? So how did you get into coaching rugby? And I'm guessing it was sort of specifically the coaching element that attracted you. And then why rugby, I guess?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I was in university in Limerick. I was working towards a PE and maths degree, and yeah, just got an opportunity to work in a boarding school in Limerick. Someone came to the school. It just went for there. Really, it is an incredibly accidental story. You know, I do think ultimately I would have found coaching somewhere or another, whatever that might have looked like. Obviously played a lot of sports when I was younger. It just, yeah, wasn't rugby. And PE was, I was passionate about teaching and I still am. You know, I'm passionate about coaching, obviously. And, but that's how it came about. It literally was as accidental as that. And so they called the university. Unfortunately, the guy they called, he's since passed away, PJ Smith, but he was a fantastic rugby coach. He coached people like Eddie O'Sullivan, Declan Kidney, who probably at the time, I didn't realize it, but served as a mentor, really. And then another school came down to the university and they were looking for a PE and maths teacher. And they were showed around the school by PJ. I've no doubt PJ said, oh, this guy would be maybe a good option. So I ended up, that was Congo's. Yeah, the school of the two Kearney brothers and Gordon Darcy, Fergus McFadden, and so on. And I've been very lucky, you know, some of the players that have worked with along the way. You know, my first group in Congo's, I think first two groups, we went through two undefeated seasons. And really, an awful lot of that was just about the boys and working with them, you know, and then discovering the game, I guess, as you go along. But I think I mentioned it already, there's no preconceived ideas, or there was no fear of, this isn't how you do it. It was just figure it out. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. And when you love something, it's never work.
And what I love about your route, mate, is that you weren't traditionally a player. So I love the fact that you were a hurler and a footballer as a youngster. Because I had, growing up, and especially in my early professional days, I had so many former rugby players that coaching for them was all about passion, energy, work rate. But there was nothing of the word you used earlier that was lacking in my career with detail. Like when you talk about detail, it is space, it's distances, it's timing, it's rhythm, it's opportunities, it's creation. It's all these different ways of solving problems. But I never had any of that until I worked with Fabien Galthié, who was my coach, age 26. He's now one of the best coaches in the world. Whereas before that, I felt totally underserved as a player. So I love the fact that you've come from a completely different route, different perspective, but still it's problem solving. That's what the game is. There are loads of different ways to play. How do you attack? How do you defend? It's a game of chess with big pieces. And I saw, like, you've described coaching previously as an addiction. So how do you keep it all healthy? How do you find that right balance, keep it all in perspective, enjoy your coaching, but still manage to stay sane?
Yeah, it's a great question. Just on the first part that you mentioned, I couldn't agree more. For me, it's solving problems. It's equipping people with the ability to understand what the problem is and to find the solutions. It's not about, you don't always have to have all the solutions. And that's probably been one of the things for me as well, that we'll figure it out. That's what good players do. Good players, good coaches help each other to figure it out. That's probably always been the philosophy. In terms of finding the healthy balance, you know, when you work in the Leinster schools, I don't know if you know Leinster schools, but it's in its little microcosm, it's a massive thing, you know. And I remember at one stage we lost the Senior Cup final. We had an opportunity to win three in a row with Clongos, and we lost the final to Dan Levy-inspired St. Michael's. And yeah, we were disconsolate afterwards. Terrible. It was 2012. And I remember afterwards my dad saying, he said, listen, all, there's a small minority of people in Dublin that care about this competition. So I've got some work for you at home. So come on, get over it. And that was probably difficult to hear at the time. But, you know, for him, it was like these boys have something much more important to look forward to. They've got their leaving cert. They've got their full lives. You know, you've helped them to enjoy a period and hopefully you've equipped them with some life skills. And if you've done that, then you've done your job. It is tricky because for my wife in particular, you know, it's an interesting one because it's like your pastime is your profession. So like if I want to take a break, maybe I'll watch some Premiership rugby or you'll watch the URC or, you know, you'll read a book on coaching or whatever it might be. So that's the fine line. You know, the kids in particular are great. I remember one time coming home, our very first tour with the Sharks. I went back to Ireland. My wife and kids are still there. The eldest one said to me, said, oh, how did you do that? And I was like, we won 1 out of 4. Oh, geez, that's not great, is it? And I was like, well, it wasn't too bad. It's like, no, you've got a lot of work to do. But what a great way of looking at it, because she was right.
And bringing all that together, obviously a lot of coaching is, you've kind of both alluded to it. It's kind of, problem solving, but also man management and dealing with people. You've gone from a few years ago coaching youngsters to now coaching some of the best players in the world, and also you have a background of not playing rugby. Does that present problems just in terms of some people maybe having preconceived ideas of you, and also in terms of getting the message across? Is it just as easy with the best players in the world? Is it easier, or do you have to have a different approach to when you're dealing with youngsters?
People are people, I guess. Like, you know, you're obviously talking about different levels of the game, but I think it's very straightforward in terms of the playing part. You know, in terms of, it will get you some credibility if you've played the game at a certain level. But ultimately, if you're not capable of adding value to the players now, well, I'm not sure it's going to add an awful lot. You know, so maybe it will get you an opportunity to work with a team. But after that, you've got to add value to the players. You've got to work hard. You've got to show the ability to help them improve and get the best out of themselves. And that's what coaching is about. You know, it's not about getting the job. It's about what you do when you have it. And it's never been something for me. For me, it's ultimately about trying to do the best possible job that I can do with whoever I work with. And regardless of who that is, you want to help them improve. You want to help them get the best out of them. And I think as well, like, I'm not trying to teach Damien Penault how to pass or Matthew Jalibert how to play a square. You're trying to teach them how to play in this team, how to get the best out of this team. And that's the key part for me, the key ingredient. You know, for me, the excitement is the sum of the parts. That's it. You know, it's about being part of something collectively that is far greater than you could individually ever be.
I think it's quality. I would have absolutely loved to have been a coach, but I didn't have the balls to do it. I wouldn't have been able to pack my family and go to South Africa. I was like, I just wanted stability after playing and moving around all the different towns. Yeah. I just wanted the other thing. I wanted stability. I regret it a little bit now. And it was interesting, the point you made about how do you keep it mentally stable. I remember getting down about a top 14 result, was captain at the side, upset, embarrassed. And my dad was like, Johnny, can you tell me what the LA Lakers score was? He's actually here with me as well. It's interesting, you mentioned your dad made the same point. What was the LA Lakers score last week and who were they playing against? I was like, I got no idea. He was like, exactly. That's one of the biggest sporting organizations in the world. Do you think anybody cares about your problems in the team? No, like, get on with it. There's more to life. There you go. Dad rules. Dads are always right.
There's another great story around that as well, about Jamie Carragher spoke about wanting to coach. And he said Jurgen Klopp, Liverpool had just won the Champions League. He said, I want to be Jurgen Klopp, but I want to be Jurgen Klopp now. I don't want to be Jurgen Klopp for 7 years at Mainz when he was coaching there. I don't want to be Jurgen Klopp for 9 years at Borussia Dortmund when he was coaching there. I don't want to be Jurgen Klopp when everyone wanted him sacked when he arrived at Liverpool first. I want to be Jurgen Klopp now. And it's probably a really good lesson as well in terms of it's like everything else. It takes time, doesn't it?
It does. You look at your Wayne Rooneys and people that are trying to step in Premiership football and not lasting long. And I guess it takes me to the next part. I wanted to ask you about the influences you've had. You mentioned coaches within academic structures in Ireland, but the people that you've worked with so far, you spent time with Lanny, Stuart Lancaster at Leinster, your time there, he's now flying high with Racing, you're flying high with Bordeaux. still in touch with him?
Yeah, listen, I think ultimately it's quite an irony, isn't it, that it was Irish rugby that benefited most from England's exit from the World Cup, you know. And obviously I was at Leinster at the time, and you know, one of the first meetings that Stuart took was to present his learnings from the World Cup, which in a bizarre way had never actually been presented to the RFU. You know, so he finished working with England, and he, you know, as I said, it was one of the first staff meetings that we had, and he laid it bare. It was a fantastic meeting. It was emotional in lots of ways, I'm sure, for him. But his desire was to help people and you know, share what he had learned from what was a particularly difficult period in his life. And you know, listen, it was fantastic for me. Working with him at a distance, I guess, you know, because, you know, he obviously was at the senior team. The connection with Leinster is quite strong. One of the biggest strengths, I suppose, of the club is how tightly knitted they are from top to bottom, really, you know, from CEO all the way down to the academy and the sub-academy level. But some of the things that I would have taken from Stuart were certainly some of the lessons that he learned there around finding the balance. You know, he was very clear that he maybe lost sight of the balance between coaching, leadership and management, and maybe got too much caught up in the management side of things. And you know, I certainly don't want to speak for him or anything. That was something that I've probably always been cognizant of. And obviously, you know, from a coaching perspective, it took an awful lot from him as well in terms of how he just structured his coaching sessions and what that looked like, how he coached decision making and the unstructured side to the game, I think, was a real strength that he brought into the Irish, certainly into the Leinster team, and obviously, you know, to a certain degree to the Irish side as well. So very, very lucky to have coincided with that era. But you know, when you work in Leinster, I guess you work with very competent people in lots of different areas. And I remember Graham Henry came in the first year I was there. He spent a few weeks there, and I remember having a coffee with him. And one thing he said to me, he said, listen, just take your time, build your career. You're 35 years of age. He said, when I was your age, I was a principal of a school in New Zealand. And that was something that probably resonated, because we're all impatient, aren't we? You just want to, you know, yeah, I want this, or I want that, or I want the other. And it just... Yeah, fantastic advice. And Leo, obviously, is somebody who's gone a very different route and done incredibly well. You know, he's done a remarkable job, really, from a difficult starting point, you know, and he's somebody that didn't have the luxury of building a bank of experience and figured it out along the way. But yeah, has done an incredible job at Leinster, and obviously would have learned a lot from him, particularly around the people piece and how you bring together a large group of people. That was my biggest lesson from the Irish 20s. You know, the first year, I thought it was just, once I get the players right, that's it. Everywhere there's an opportunity to learn. I was very lucky. I had a brilliant maths tutor when I did my teaching practice. And at the end of my lesson, he said to me, he said, listen, it was a really good lesson. And he said, but you missed so many teaching moments. And he said, the teaching moments are just opportunities to learn that just happen organically. He said, you just missed so many in that lesson. You remember when X said this, you could have maybe built on that and brought real life connection to that. Or do you remember when this happened? Maybe you could have done that here. And I guess that's something that, you know, 20 years later, it still stands out in my mind. But there are so many opportunities to build connection with people, but also learning moments in every day for me and for the people you work with.
And on Bordeaux, and some of the players you have at your disposal there, I'm sure you're learning things every day from some of them. Just to touch on a few, because we've described it as arguably the best backline in the world, one of the younger members, and you're obviously used to working with youngsters in Ireland, Louis Biel-Bierre, he has lit up the international scene already. Where does he sort of sit in the list of youngsters, certainly in that position that you've coached?
For me, I would never rank or rank him. He's a fantastic player I love working with, as I said, I loved working with Apelele Fassi. I loved working with Hugo Keenan. I loved working with Jimmy O'Brien. I've worked with lots of different players in that position. And for me, it's always been a case of trying to help Louis be the best version of Louis. And not ask, you know, he doesn't need to be oh, did you see X do this? Or did you see Y do that? Or I saw this guy before. I think we've all read that passage where David Moyes was trying to coach Nemanja Vidic how to defend like Phil Jagielka, wasn't it? I don't think that's really, for me, it's about trying to help him become the best possible version of himself. And so, some of that is, you know, he's incredibly young. He has some fantastic enthusiasm for the game. He's incredible pace. He's got great vision. It's some of it is just helping him understand the pictures that he's seen and understand some of the other solutions maybe that are out there, recognize the opportunities that present themselves. Sometimes the exuberance of youth means that they work a little bit too much and maybe miss some of the opportunities that are a little bit closer. And that's been one of the biggest things for me, I guess, with the group that we have here, is just trying to improve our scanning, trying to improve our ability to play together.
What's he like as a personality, Noel? He's still very young, obviously developing as a young man, but what's he like as a character?
He's a brilliant character. I'll give you we did a one-to-one there recently, and I sent him a little story about, I don't know if you know, the Stephen Covey's book is The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. One of the habits is a little story about big rocks, and it's about a university professor who gives his group, he gives them rocks, pebbles, gravel, and sand, and he asks them to put them into a container. And obviously the only way you can put them into the container was if you put the big rocks in first. You put the big rocks in first, then you put the pebbles, then you put the gravel, then you put the sand, and it will all fit nice and neatly into the container. So students struggle to do this, and afterwards he explained. And then the professor explained to the boys and girls, it was a mixed group. He said, you know, this is like life. You know, if you don't put your first priorities in first, then, you know, your second and third, well, then maybe you end up spending your life sorting gravel and sorting sand. You know, my analogy is you know, in life and in rugby, you've got to identify your big rocks, and then you've got to make time to mine them. And this was one of the things that I sent to Louis. And when we had the meeting, he's like, oh, it's really interesting. He said, my dad used to tell me that story when I was a kid, if I was spending too much time playing computer games. So you mentioned your dad already, Johnny. Is probably a good insight in terms of how Louis was brought up. He's just got a really, really good in his shoulders. He's really clear about how to get better. He's really diligent about how to get better. And you know, the exciting thing for this team and the individuals within the team is there's absolutely no ceiling.
On the other wing for you is someone who is definitely incomparable. And we know Damian Pano is probably the best winger in the world at the moment in terms of form over the past couple of years. But we, Johnny and I, have spent a lot of time talking about him in terms of his character. And he is obviously a one-off. Whoever you talk to, we've heard people say his nickname Stifler. We've heard he's a joker. But obviously he's a serious guy as well. He's a serious professional. And he's obviously matured a lot as well. He's developed as a person as well as a rugby player. I just wonder, when you've got a guy like that, clearly it's the collective, and it's, as you described, how you get that backline, that team to work together to become the best they can possibly be. But for him particularly, is it trying to get his hands on the ball as much as possible, or how do you kind of get the best out of a guy who is clearly already at that level?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, he certainly is a one-off, but you'll hear lots of people describe James Lowe as a one-off. Mac Hansen is a one-off. I think every team benefits from having somebody who has a different outlook, and I think that's the beauty of Damian. He probably sees things a different way, and yeah, it's certainly been great for me. He'll challenge as well. He wants to contribute to the group. Obviously, for us and for the backline, we try and have a structure where there's freedom with responsibility, you know, and that's what it looks like. You've got the freedom, you know, we do look at the back three and where their involvements are. And for me, you're trying to paint a picture where we're getting the ball into the back three's hands as much as possible. You know, we've got a fast car. We want to drive it, you know, so that's it really, you know, we're still trying to figure it out, you know, and that's, I think I mentioned it at the start. That's what we're trying to do together. It's not me saying this is what it has to look like. It's we're trying to find out how to get the absolute maximum out of this group of players and how to get that cohesion and that instinct. And it was probably lacking a little bit on the weekend. You know, we felt we created a lot of opportunities against Bayonne. But, you know, unfortunately, for a variety of different reasons, we're probably missing that last 1 or 2%. And, you know, when you're 5 or 6 people are missing 1 or 2%. It's 12%. I've got a maths degree now, so you don't need to question that. Some lads, I'm certain of it. That's exactly it. So we're just trying to figure out, how to be collectively as good as we possibly can. And I do think, you know, the team piece. You know, if everybody was the same, it'd be a very boring place. And potentially incredibly frustrating as well. So that's the beauty of what someone like Damian brings as well. You know, if you 35 Damians, it could be a different story. He's been a brilliant contributor. He's been a brilliant contributor to the group. And obviously, I joked with him after the Perpignan game. I said, you know, he made me a 20% better tech coach today. So maybe a 50% better tech coach today. It's brilliant to have him in the team.
35 Stiflers. There's a thought, isn't it? No chance. It's amazing. It's also really nice to see just Bordeaux in general, because it's always been a side that has had big budget. It's been well backed by Laurent Marty, and there's been good money put behind it, but it's never quite punched. It nearly got there with Christophe Urios. Decent levels. But now when you see the product, and again, this goes back to my point about detail, when you see the types of tries that are being created, you know, from first phase tries with creativity that obviously you've set up off field, like the ones that run against Bristol in the Champions Cup, like really curated, nice pieces of play. That's one of the biggest compliments you can give coaches. I know during the season it counts for nothing because you want to be there and win at the end. We had Urios who said it counts for nothing to be the champions of autumn. He said that with all of his clubs. Like, the money time comes at the end of the year, but it's a joy to watch. So for neutrals like us who get to watch these games in the top 14, Bordeaux now are and have been a joy to watch this season. And the players within that we've mentioned, on the wing is easy, they're rapid, they're finishing. Other characters, Mathieu Jalibert, who there's a bit of a clash with Urios previously, but I think he had 30-odd carries against Bayonne. I'm not sure if that's a good thing, positive or a plan, or if it's just the way the game panned out. But again, what's he like? Like, having these guys to work with, I mentioned the two wingers, but you've got the sort of axe of a French team now. I'm assuming Luku will be your starter in that game against Ireland. He'd be my pick anyway, but you've got Luku, Jalibert, Moefana. So the boys that are orchestrating, that are planning things out, the drivers, I'd imagine they'll be your leaders as well, your 9 and 10. What are these guys like to work with day in, day out, and how they go about driving that back line and how you want to play?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, in terms of the process, we got an attack group here. We meet on a Monday morning. We review, the game from the weekend. You know, it's a group of about 6 or 7 players. We agree, debate initially potentially, and agree on the message for the team. We agree on what we did well, what we want to improve on, and then we look forward to the game on the weekend. And again, you look at the plan, we agree on the plan. At some stage later on that day, we'll meet again with the key 9 and 10, agree on the plays for that week that we're going to look at, and then the group drive it through the week. You know, for me, the coach's voice decreases as the week goes on, you know. So like at the start of the week, it's a lot about that teaching, learning, clarity of what we're about. And, you know, without clarity, there can be no accountability. And then really, as you go through the week, you pass the mantle over. You know, Matthew's been absolutely fantastic, incredible, it's kind of marrying that ability to bring detail with the ability to make instinctive decisions. I can't pay him any higher compliment than that. You know, he has the ability to deliver on a plan and deliver on detail, but he also has the ability to make instinctive decisions in the moment and back it with pace. You know, if he sees opportunities, his ability to take it is first class. So it's been brilliant working with him, and Maxime, Luca, obviously the same. And, you know, equally, we've got young 9 and 10 at the club as well that we're trying to develop at the same time, and recognize that exactly what you said, Johnny, a few minutes ago. You know, it's, you can't confuse moment in the season with the season. You know, we're at a moment in the season now. Ultimately, it'll be judged at you know, our ability to surf the big wave in May and June. So I think for us, we've got a process in terms of how we work. Yannick has been very clear in terms of how he sees and his vision of how we work as well, which has been brilliant. You know, for me, I think I mentioned at the start, kind of the 26 slides and the 45-minute lectures, it's not the way to do it. You know, there's much more sometimes at the backs. We just have a coffee, which is controversial with the forwards as well as they're working hard. But yeah, just that informal setting encourages a point of view. It encourages better communication. It encourages better conversations. Sometimes it's just smaller groups working together with their centers together, factory together, nines and tens together, having a chat. Okay, boys, you want to show anything? Do you want to discuss anything? Yeah, can we get this clip, this clip, this clip? We discuss those. Or so it's probably different ways of doing it to try to keep it fresh and to try to increase the player ownership as well. Because ultimately, that's for me, you know, Matthew doesn't believe in the plan, or Matteo or whoever plays, it doesn't believe in the plan, then they're not going to go out and deliver it to the best of their ability. You know, so it's about having the best choice, best fit for the team with what we have, and then your best effort, best possible effort on the weekend. You know, it will rarely be perfect, but if you give your best effort, then we'll learn from it and we'll get better.
We're about to head into a big couple of weeks in the Champions Cup. Johnny and I have spoken generally, the French clubs didn't start particularly well in December. Bordeaux, obviously, pretty much a perfect start. And Bordeaux were one of the teams that you kind of thought out of the competition could have a good crack at it this season. Isn't the case for all of the French sides who often prioritise the top 14. Is it something that you spoke about as a coaching group ahead of the start of the Champions Cup, whether this could be your year?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, the Champions Cup certainly for Yannick was a target. You know, it's a competition that he knows as a player, he knows as a coach. It's something that, you know, we did discuss and we're certainly keen to put our best foot forward. You know, probably the players as well are motivated by playing against the best, you know, and there's an opportunity to do that, you know. So I think it wasn't the big sales pitch to them, you know. From the outset, they were clear they wanted to compete to the best of their ability. We probably feel like we've got a good team. Eh? So it's as simple as that. You know, we've got an opportunity to do well in the competition and test ourselves against some of the best players. And probably the best way of, you know, stress testing, if you like, you know, this weekend against Saracens, get an opportunity to play against, you know, probably one of the most aggressive line speeds in club rugby. So, you know, what a fantastic opportunity for us to test ourselves, I guess, and to look at, you know, it's a brilliant challenge against what, largely speaking, is an international team. So, we're just excited about the opportunity in the competition, whilst recognizing that the next 2 weekends, we've had a reasonable start, but it's only 50%. You know, this weekend we face, you know, multiple time champions. Next weekend we face a daunting trip to the Highveld against a rampant Bulls team who haven't lost since Lucanio Am's miracle restart receive and run for kick and try in, I think it was 2021. So yeah, it's a fantastic competition. You know, the colour, the noise, the vibrancy, the different teams, you know, for me, it's just brilliant. Really excited to see what it looks like this weekend against the stacked Saracens team.
And so against that stacked Saracens team, let's get into the detail. We talked about it earlier. Let's get the math section. What is your approach, or how is your approach different when it comes to playing in Saracens' big, aggressive line speed? What is it that your backline will adjust or change or exploit when playing against a side like Saracens?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, John. I think against every team, it's different. For me, your defense, the opposition defense gives you your attack. You don't go in saying, we're just going to do this because it suits us. So, like, obviously, when you play against a team like Saracens, who are incredibly aggressive in terms of their line speed, incredibly aggressive in terms of their time in the tackle, incredibly aggressive in terms of the pressure that they put through the ruck, and also allied to a very, very strong kicking game. So you've got to find the balance in terms of your counterattack and the opportunities that you look to take. You've got to make sure that you're focused on winning races, you know, because that's something that they do brilliantly. You know, the things that require no talent. I think Saracens used to talk a lot about effort errors being unacceptable. Well, it's clear, you know, when you watch them, it's pretty clear that that's ingrained in them. So, yeah, there are obviously little bits and pieces around the kicking game that you've got to work. You've got to work out a counter attack, because we don't want to take that away, because obviously it's one of our strengths. But you can't just say, well, we're going to counter on everything. You know, in terms of the setups, you know, of Lonnet, they're incredibly aggressive. So you've got to have a plan around how you can negate that to an extent, how you can create some doubt in that as well. Because mathematically speaking, there is space, no matter what you do, no matter how aggressive you are. It just means you leave a space somewhere else quicker. You know, so that's the reality. And you know, we mentioned a problem, you know, at the start of every week, we've got a problem to solve. And the feedback's coming on the weekend. You know, for us, that's the exciting part of Saracens. They present a significant problem, but it's not unsolvable. So for us, it's trying to pick the best tools, create the best plan, and then give our best effort on the weekend. And equally, you know, sometimes what you scout is not what you get. You know, so obviously Bristol, we looked at them a lot. They came and they just didn't play. So when they came to Bordeaux, they didn't play. They just kicked everything. So like we obviously had looked at them and, you know, they played a lot. There were some opportunities on turnover attack. There were some different opportunities that you know, they were giving up, that they didn't give up. So what you scout is not always what you get. So your players have to have the ability to adapt as well. That's probably one of the things that I would say similar for this weekend. You know, Saracen's game has evolved. They are looking to attack more. I think they've scored a lot more tries, you know, than maybe they have done in previous years, and are less reliant on a kicking game in defence. But we have to have the ability to adapt as well if we get presented with a different picture on Sunday evening.
Really interesting. Just quickly before we let you go, Noel, we spent a lot of time talking about your journey and how varied it's been. You've obviously only been at Bordeaux 6 months, a lot still to come there. But in terms of your personal ambitions for the future, it will obviously depend on how things unfold. Opportunities will present themselves. But would you like to be a head coach one day, a director of rugby? Is that where it's heading? Is the ultimate dream to coach Ireland or internationally?
I'm not a dreamer, eh? I think for me, it's very straightforward. All of those decisions are outside my control. All that's in my control is doing the best possible job where I am. And that's what I love doing, and that's what I will continue to do. So, you know, whether that was coaching the under-13s at Clongowes, it was about doing the best possible job I could do with that group and enjoying the journey whilst doing it. So that's it. That's the ambition, to be honest. And everything else that happens after that will be as a consequence of living like that. So, yeah, that's very much the ambition. And I guess the second part of that is ensuring that my family are happy as well, you know. So I've got three kids, you know, you guys mentioned some of the challenges that come around with that as well. So that's obviously a very important piece for me. Yeah, I love doing what I'm doing, and we'll continue to work hard to ensure that I put, you know, the best possible product out every week that we can.
And you were known as Super Mac, I think, in Ireland. Where did that come from? And has it made its way over to France, or do we need to get Johnny to spread it far and wide?
No, definitely not.
Very modest, but Johnny, spread it out there.
I'm more Big Mac. We can get Super Mac up to Bordeaux. That's great.
Thanks so much, Noel. Really interesting. And good luck at the weekend against Saracens and for the rest of the season.
Thanks very much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Noel. Cheers.
No problem. Cheers, lads.
Super Mac, Johnny. Spread it far and wide in France. Very modest, but clearly going places.
Mate, he has got a huge reputation. So I'd heard about this guy. And how did you hear about an Irish coach through Leinster Schools Academy system who is in South Africa? I'd heard about this guy when he was coaching the Sharks. Massive potential, great approach, good bloke, but fundamentally gets shit done and gets a really good end product out of whatever team he's coaching. Be that the under-13s that he was joking about at the end, or the Sharks or Bordeaux. So, I mean, like every single side that he has touched so far. And the rugby community is a small community. Everybody is absolutely raving about Noel as a coach, as a bloke, And you can just see the passion that comes through when he speaks at length about people, about ways of playing, about detail. That's what you want as a player. So great to have him on. He was a great talker as well. Really good conversation. Great to know that he's well and settled in Bordeaux, and they're flying, mate. So yeah, Super Mac, Big Mac, great to have him on. But yeah, just great to have another young coach. And again, what I love is the different approach. Isn't a former player,
yeah,
but has a methodical, structured, process-like approach, and it's detail. And that is the difference now with top-level games is, and he mentioned that even with something simple about line speed, if you've got an aggressive line speed, you're leaving space somewhere else. So expect chip kicks to slow down line speed, expect crossfield kick, expect taking the game to the middle of the field and then flicking back down the short side. All these different ways, there's different ways to exploit different systems. And that's what high level rugby is. It's an aggressive game of chess, and the best teams, yes, they have the best pieces, but they also have the best chess masters, the best people at choosing and adopting the best moves and best processes for their players. So really interesting. Great to have him on, and a really good personality.
Yeah. He maybe didn't want to be drawn too much on comparing, obviously, individuals. He's clearly massively effective at dealing with individuals and different individuals. Very good on Damien Penno, for example, who we always talk about. But the detail in France, perhaps historically changing a bit at the moment, but there are still a lot of teams who will sort of go out, play their own way. Very insightful to hear him say the opposition defense gives you your attack. So clearly they're going to change week to week.
Yeah, well, you have your base template and your structures of how you want to play, but there are different things within, you know, within your armory that you pull out depending on who you're playing against, depending on the defensive structures. If it's a blitz defense, if it's a flat hard press, if it's an up and out, there's all these different points that you choose, different starter plays or different launches. Generally, once you get into your multi-phase, your structures are the same, but you know that different options are more effective. Like, you know, if you're playing against the big blitz, you'd try and punch through it as opposed to playing out the back and getting caught in midfield. There's all these different ways that you would problem solve and fix, but that language comes from your coaches that understand the challenges that you're up against and then can get you effectively communicate that within the team that you have, your Lukus, your Jalibert, and then that gets deployed within your other chess pieces. You know, your tight five that might be in the middle of the field. Right, lads, this week, buckle up. We're going to have to punch through the middle, so we need big carries. Next week, boys, get your hands on. If the call communication comes back out from your Bentapawise or your Moifanas, we're going to go wide and beat this blitz or play wide to, you know, puncture a drift defense. So all these different ways. But you're right, that is fundamentally what every team tries to do, but not every coach is effective at getting those messages over, making the right decisions, identifying the right plays to use. Whereas Noel sounds like, with his approach, he's on the money.
Far more interesting to listen to Noel talk all day long than us bang on about the top 14, Johnny, but we should round up.
Agreed.
What was a busy festive period, just briefly before we move on to the Champions Cup. And it was a good few weeks for Perpignan, wasn't it? They beat Bayonne at home, Castaway, Oyonnax at home, and all of a sudden, they've risen up the table.
Yeah, I mean, it's still tight at the bottom, but great festive period for Perpignan. You know, now you've got Bayonne, we're sitting in 10th on 24 points. Perpignan, they've scraped up to 21 points with those three wins. You've got Oyonnax and Lyon are now sat on 20, Montpellier down in 16, incredibly. Still can't believe they're sitting last. But great series one for Perpignan, who were worthy winners in each and every one of those games. Pozzolo Tuilagi, mate, he's been the difference.
Yeah.
He's magnificent. The go forward he gives them, the simple carries, the yardage, the offloads, just creating things out of nothing and allowing them to get on the front foot. But they've done really well to win all of those little tight fixtures against other sides at the wrong end of the table during a difficult part of the year, traditionally for everyone. Like horrible pitches, rain, muddy, turgid games. They'll be absolutely delighted. So yeah, really positive for Perpignan. Montpellier won as well at the weekend, but they're still down the bottom, but it's going to be tight.
Yeah, we've been speaking about Montpellier all season, obviously, and how they were disappointing. Cock is gone, et cetera, et cetera. But we haven't spoken a lot about Lyon. Anyone can lose at Toulouse, clearly. Yep. They did get hammered, 45-0. That can happen. But how are they finding themselves second bottom?
They've had a tough run of fixtures as well, to be fair. So they've come up against some big teams. I think the fixture before Toulouse, they just beat Montpellier by 2 points, which is an important home win. But look, again, it's a change in coaching structure. They've got young coaching staff that were brought in at the start of the season. We've talked about that. You've got Arno Hege, who's come in as well as forward coach. He's trying to do a decent job. But this is their first big job. And the top 14 is cruel, mate. We speak about it every year. It's not a place for learning. It's a place for big personalities, knowing how to get things done, imposing a game plan and winning games. Lyon as well, in terms of the players they have, there's a few players clearly looking away. You've got Demba Bemba looking to get away. You've got big Tau Fanua apparently looking to move. So all of these things reek of maybe a lack of stability behind the scenes. You've had years where you've had Xavier Garbajosa, he's been removed. It just hasn't been settled. So maybe that has all weighed on them. And now they're kind of paying the price. Again, with the staff, the squad that they have, they shouldn't be in that position. They should be ahead of Oyonnax. They should be ahead of Perpignan. Their budget's probably bigger than Bayonne. They should be up there. But it's the difference of 4 points, mate. They're 4 points off Bayonne. They're sat second bottom with Oyonnax. But they should be punching and doing better. They've got a slightly easier run of fixtures after the Champions Cup games, and they'll be looking to pick up a few points as well. But like you said, I think any team at the minute can go to Toulouse and play against that Toulouse side with the power, with the ability to finish. 75% of sides that go to Toulouse at the minute are probably going to lose by a decent score. And there's another one that's just been absolutely pumped. Toulouse at the minute are strong, effective ball with ball in hand, and they blew Lyon off the park.
And we knew they'd come back stronger after a poor first start to the season. Loads of reasons why they've not started as well as you might expect. But La Rochelle, yep, still only mid-table, but they had a decent festive period. And Greg was back, wasn't he? Back with a bang, like he'd never been away.
He's a freak. I don't want to say, I mean, it's the nicest thing you can say to a back. He's a freak. He's an absolute freak. 20 out of 20 tackles, turnovers, carries. He looked energized. He looked fit. He looked hungry. He spoke in the press this week as well. We'll need to get him back on over the next few weeks or before the Six Nations, but just about the need to have that break. And you're right. La Rochelle, for a number of different reasons, haven't fired, but he is their talisman. He is the man that gives them that grunt, that go forward, gets them on the front foot, makes it difficult for opposition, weighs in with three or four turnovers every single game, along with Botia, who was like sensational again at the weekend. But with him back, La Rochelle now have all of their players, and they as a team just look more settled. Found their rhythm, a win away at Pau, who are flying. Again, they've been top four since the start of the season against two Whitelock brothers, not just one. You've now got Sam as well in the mix. It's a good Pau side. So for La Rochelle, and again, is that maybe the shot in the arm that they needed just before Champions Cup to go on a run now and get themselves through into the next round? I hope it is. But Greg was phenomenal. Great to see him back. Great for the French team as well. Ronan O'Gara, we're delighted to have him back in the yellow and black of La Rochelle because he was just exceptional, as he always is. He was exceptional at the weekend.
Let's quickly look ahead to round three of the Champions Cup then. You mentioned La Rochelle. It's a must win for them, really, against Leicester at home.
Must win. Absolutely. I'll be up at that one for TNT Sports this weekend for the British TV. But they have to win. They have to win that game. And realistically, they probably have to try and bag a bonus point as well to affect their next round. So, yeah, they haven't won as yet in the competition. They must win that game. And you'd also be asking them, and Rog will be the same, he'll be wanting them to try and nick a five-pointer if they can. But that's against Leicester, who have travelled well. They were decent in Paris in the second round of the competition against Stade Francais. But La Rochelle backfiring, confident, big away win to Pau at the weekend. I expect 5 points from them against Leicester.
And we've spoken about how a lot of the French sides didn't start well in the opening couple of rounds in December. Stade Francais, Bayonne, maybe going to send the reserves to Leinster and Northampton, you'd think, given the chances that they might have. But what are the other big ones for the French sides?
I think Stade Francais and Bayonne will be sending the bin juice. That's not to say the bin juice doesn't work, because the bin juice for Bayonne went to Munster and won. They then lost to Glasgow at home, so not great. But, you know, there's something to be said for the bin juice. Don't always write off the bin juice. But I think that's what Stade Francais and Bayonne will send.
Spoken by someone who might have been in a bin juice at some point. No.
Captain.
But no, never.
Captain of the bin juice, right? No, there's some crackers this weekend. Bath against Racing. So you got Finn Russell up against his old side and his old teammates. That'll be great. Down at the Rec. Ulster to lose. They've produced some great fixtures over the years as well. Toulouse going to Ulster. Toulon Munster is a bit of a strange one because we don't know what to expect from Toulon. Munster have been a bit of a mixed bag as well this season.
Loads of injuries, Munster as well.
Yeah, so that's not going to be easy. Lyon, mate, they need something. And again, their next round's away from home. So You got to think they'll put all their eggs into this game at home against Connacht this weekend because they need to find confidence. They need to build before they get back into top 14. But personally, the game of the weekend, I thought I was going to be doing this one to the TV, is Bordeaux-Saracens. Bordeaux are, for me, the pick of the French sides alongside Toulouse at the minute. Up against English rugby royalty, Saracens, Owen Farrell, you'll be looking for a holiday house down by Arcachon. Outside Bordeaux this weekend, potentially, as he travels in with Saracens, but that is going to be the clash. And it was really cool to hear Noel talk about it, but how will Bordeaux play? How will Saracens enjoy 35,000 sellout at Chaban Delmas, which is not an easy place to go to, up against one of the best backlines in the world at the minute? Will their press defense and their line speed suffocate them? Or will the power of Bordeaux's pack? I'm not sure if you watched Big Ben Tamifuna against Bordeaux, against Bayonne last weekend. Mate, he's smoking, boys. So can Saracens deal with that power? And can Bordeaux deal with the Saracens' line speed? So looking forward to seeing all these little challenges within the game and how that pans out, but should be an absolute cracker.
Can't wait. Thanks, Johnny. A big thanks to Noel McNamara for joining us. And thanks to all you guys for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe. Leave us a nice review if you can. Check us out on Rugby Pass as well as on YouTube. And we'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir and Happy New Year, Johnny.
Happy New Year, mate. See you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.